to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, that is a crushing blow.
To hear that
Brent Moss, you know, it's almost like yesterday watching Brent Moss. He was 50 years old, man.
I heard that, it made me feel old. I thought, what the hell? But then I did the math and I realized he was still at Madison when he was 24. I mean, he was pretty old when he was going to school as for us. But he was a good back. I remember how sorry I was when he got caught with a crack cocaine on his sack.
I didn't really know that
that happened while he was at Madison.
Really?
Yeah.
He was one of the first of that then succession of great backs, that came to UW.
Right.
Yeah. So was he there then before Barry Alvarez?
No, but that news article said that he played under Barry Alvarez, and I think he was with
Must
Barry Alvarez
early on.
Yeah, it was his first winning season, I think, in 92, I think they said. But yeah, I mean, he was a good ball player, and it's just sad to find there's so many, it seems, of people. Football is a very hard sport on people, and they maybe go through an unreal period in their life with unreal attention, but it's really. It's a sad thing to hear about football stars run amok.
Let me ask you, Sandy, because this thing with drugs in our culture, and I'm not saying drugs aren't in other cultures, but something about the drugs in our culture, it seems as if, you know, it's a part of it. And there's nothing we're going to ever be able to do to overcome it. And I don't know, Sandy. I mean, I know.
Well, I think maybe our culture leaves a hole in people. They try to fill it with drugs. I mean, I think maybe there's something about the American values as it relates to people, particularly in different parts of our society, where they find it necessary to fill the hole that they are experiencing with the drug experience. And it could have to do with the affluence that we experience at the upper half of America and the poverty we have in the lower half. Could have to do with materialism rather than something deeper than materialism that I think lots of cultures abroad have a far deeper sort of cultural experience, and it relates to much more than materialism. And I think the rampant materialism here might leave that hole.
You know, Sandy, it's a great point because we act as though it's an easy thing to succeed in our society. And you know, stars have to be aligned right.
Right.
Would you agree?
I was thinking during the break. You mentioned, you know, what's different about Wisconsin now than then, and what's different in Wisconsin is really what's different in the country now versus then. Back then, healthcare wasn't a problem. People like you and I, we all got our jobs and we all got healthcare, and no one even talked about healthcare as an issue politically during the 70s. And child daycare wasn't an issue because both parents weren't working in every household back in those days. There were far more. Didn't have to, right, exactly. Because of the broad middle-class jobs that were available, the home was different than it is now. And so now we have an experience where middle-class America, the newly defined middle class, that $75,000 median income with two breadwinners, and without health care and without child care available, it's very hard to make it. It's, you know, even if you make it to that position of $75,000 a year, you're living paycheck to paycheck. You live in fear of getting sick because you don't have health insurance. You basically are living your life in peril. You could lose your job and you can't make it because you're living paycheck to paycheck. You can't get sick. You don't have daycare and you can't save for retirement. Back in our day in the 70s in Wisconsin, if you had a job, you also had a retirement pension that was building up as the result of your employment.
Well, you know, Sandy, you didn't have to wind up being one of the upper echelon people in the nation. You could be an average person and live a good life in the society. And we have to stop acting like this is an easy thing to do. It is a harrowing thing to succeed in America today, Sandy. And I always talk to younger people in the 30s. And even early 40s, unless they've been very successful, and many of them have college degrees, and they are frustrated that they can't move forward in the society, and the society is going to have to make some changes. What that is, Sandy, I can't tell you what it is. But it can't keep going the way it's going now. You've got all these people graduating, Sandy, from all these universities. And so, but there's no place for them to go that is going to afford them a middle class or upper middle class lifestyle. And even if it is, it's retarded to the degree that they can't start families early. They're not going to be able to buy homes. They're not going to be able to save a lot of money. And then some of them now in their 40s haven't moved faster than we did in our mid 20s economically.
I mean, you know, the difficulty, you and I are discovering this as an epiphany because we didn't live through that in the 70s.
Right.
Because we had health care and we didn't need child daycare because our wives could stay, because our spouse, a homemaker could stay at home and tend to the child with one breadwinner. Education wasn't enormously expensive, and pensions were being taken care of. And so the American dream was there to be had. But in today's world, it isn't, because those things, like we've pointed out so many times, so how can it be changed? I guess I've come around to the progressive platform a little bit, in that I think we have to get an infrastructure in America that looks like the European infrastructure, where child daycare is universal, health care is universal, education is universally available at affordable cost, and then we can get back to the life you and I knew.
But Sandy, that has to become a priority from both the Democrats and the Republican side, because we're not just talking about right now. We're talking about the future of the nation. And I know people may say, well, you guys are talking about that all the time. Yes, because it is something that should be a priority. It's not something that we talk about all these other things, and then we don't talk about, you know, the American people and what they need. I was a part of a panel on over the weekend talking about mental illness, and I was talking with the professionals, and I asked them the question, Sandy. I said, is it possible that there's more mental illness today than there was when we were younger, Sandy? And is some of the mental illness derived from the stresses of life today, more so than when you and I was young? And so Look, if you can't deliver, if you're a parent, you're a father, Sandy, and you got a family, and you're working, and you're trying, and you can't bring it together, right? You just, you try hard, but you're overwhelmed in trying to do the right thing, trying to be a part of this America that we talk about, Sandy. And that's a lot of stress. You know, you just are working every day, and you can't, and you just can't make it happen. I mean, that kind of stress, you know, is life is stressful enough. But it just appears, Sandy, that we can't get enough of the American people in positions of power and leadership who want to talk about this, right? I mean, Democrats and Republicans. So why can't we get them to see this?
Well, I really think it's going to come down to forcing politicians to deal with the median income household and to talk about what's going on, even with middle America. I mean, whether that's middle income or not, that is middle America. The median is the family that is where half of the families in America earn less and half earn more. And, you know, we've got to start talking about the situation they find themselves in. And you can point at all these other problems that are derivative from it. We have student debt. That's the political issue. Why do we have so much student debt? Well, because education is too expensive and families can't save to pay for education. So we have student debt. You know, we've got health care as a serious issue. Why do we have health care as an issue? So I think it could all fall out of just simply looking practically at the median income family and say, okay, what about them?
So, Sandy, in our time, students who went to college, their parents saved up and paid their way through college. Right. And so they weren't burdened with it. Parents can't afford to do that for the most part anymore. So students themselves have to take on that burden. Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. What do you say? Tom, I see you. We'll come back on the other side. Be right back. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And let's go to the phone lines and Tom from L.A. Hey, Tom, what's going on, man? You say what?
Hey, Earl. Good morning. First off, we the people are the government, ultimately, and we must never forget that. Second, the problem is greed. Pure and simple, we've shown that. I don't know if you can hear me or not.
Yeah, we can.
Okay. The problem is greed. The problem is that, I mean, are we in such a denial to admit that the 40 years, 50 years of Reaganomics has not worked?
So Tom, are you on the speakerphone?
Oh, hold on. I'm going to go ahead. And, yeah. I mean, I'm not Bluetooth.
Yeah, I can tell the difference.
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. I said 40 years, 50 years of Reaganomics, we have to quit living in denial and realize that that experiment did not work. We also, I'm sure I can ask you and Sandy, how many billionaires were there in this country, or how was it back years ago?
Only a handful. But yeah, millions at that time were kind of equivalent to billions at this time.
Right. So the thing is, we've had such an income disparity between the wealthy and the regular, you know, working person. I'll tell you what, if we don't move back towards an FDR type of agenda, and if we don't move back to that quickly, you know, America's going to be gone.
Yeah, but where's the sign, Tom, that we're ever going to move back to that. And I guess that's kind of what I'm asking Sandy and the audience is, listen, man, that's got to become a priority. We just had these campaigns. And all
yeah,
that
I think
money.
I think the sign comes from looking at what Generation Z did in this last election.
Well, they voted.
They all showed up to vote. Right. That was number one. Number two, people, you know, getting. I mean, I guess we got to hit rock bottom before we actually start moving up, just like a addict, I guess. And the thing is, I don't know how much more, you know, we can hit rock bottom, but the thing is, a lot of the Democratic policies are still keeping the society in place, and the Republican policies are all about privatizing and making profits. And if that is your whole sole thing, is just to make profits and privatize everything and make the rich even richer, you're not going to get a society.
I know, but Tom, so I agree with that assessment, but that's a recipe for failure for the future of the nation.
Well, that's why we need to get, like I said, I mean, it's got to be where the people themselves stand up and, you know, and say no more. I mean, we need either a charismatic leader like FDR to come on board and really start
there.
Leading the country. I know. You know.
Well, you know, I don't know what actually has caused it all, and clearly, some of it is something like greed. I mean, but it's maybe self-interest being pursued in an environment in which the result of that is the loss of the kind of economy we had in 1972 as compared to today. But now we have to deal with today. We aren't going to get back to the kind of situation we had where everyone had pensions through their jobs and everyone had health care through their jobs. And we had single breadwinner families, so we didn't need daycare. And so if we need all those things now, then we're going to have to look to the government to provide it, which is going to require that we have charismatic leadership to alert, let everyone understand that it's in everyone's self-interest to move in that direction and to have it. So I'm not in agreement necessarily that what we got is rampant greed as the problem, but what we do have as a problem is a lack of clear leadership and a lack of focus in the political process on these fundamental issues. And I will agree with Tom, the thing he hasn't said, which is that money in politics has diverted all of our attention from this what the people are interested in to what private interests are interested in.
So, Sandy, so yes, no question. But that's not going to be an epiphany by the people who put the money in politics, right? They're not going to change their trajectory and what they're doing. But at the same time, this groundswell of people, Sandy, that you talk about, that we talk about, who continues to be left out, they're not going to accept. The younger people aren't going to continue to accept that.
Right, and they need to. We need to make sure that number one, they stay and remain interested in politics, and two, that their interest is guided by some leadership that can lead the political movement that they would like to be a part of in the right direction. So, you know, I'm in agreement with Tom. Clearly, that what we do need is leadership of the sort that can resurrect a movement in America to enact the kind of things that are needed. And I think it does involve this social infrastructure.
So what role does your and my generation, Sandy, play in it? I mean, is this something that their generation is going to have to fix themselves? Or can we begin the catalyst to begin the conversation that needs to happen in order for this thing to move?
Well, I think we need to not get in their way. I think the problem with our generation is we do continue to hold a lot of the reins of the harness of the horses here, and so we need to not get in the way, and we need to help channel this in the direction of fruitful outcomes.
All right, we've got to go to break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Remember when they used to dance? Man, all I wanted.
the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Mondays. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, let me ask you, as we enter the winter season, this is the first time in the last, couple years that we're not, you know, COVID is not the topic of conversation. And we're not all being inundated with COVID. And, I mean, I know it doesn't mean that it's over. But what are your thoughts as we enter into this winter season? It almost appears as though COVID is, I mean, it's always going to be there, but it looks like they've kind of, it's kind of in the rearview mirror, right?
Well, it seems to be.
Or is it too early? Or am I too early?
No. I think you're right. I think there are new diseases that are out the windshield, and the rearview mirror probably is COVID. But interestingly, all the care we took to avoid getting sick from COVID caused us to avoid getting sick from all sorts of other things, too. And now we're reading all about this thing called RVS or RSV.
Yeah, for children. Right.
For children. So the reason they're getting it is because they didn't get sick when they were real little. So they went several years without ever getting this kind of a cold-like thing. And now when they get it, it's much more serious. So who knows? You know, it's a bit like when they've discovered that using hand cleaner all the time, hand sanitizer is bad for you, right? You need some germs. So maybe we're going to swing, the pendulum's going to swing back, and we're going to expose ourselves to a little more disease risk with the notion that actually our immune system requires it.
Well, you know, I have, because I've been around a lot of people lately, and you know, for the first time in a couple years, you know, not thinking about, you know, COVID. I know they're still talking about we need to get the booster shots. Have you gotten the latest booster shot?
Yeah, finally I did a couple of weeks ago. I had waited a long time. I think I skipped the prior booster shot, but I did get this one.
That's why I want to, you know, we get to a point where I got the last one. But why are we hesitating to get these vaccinations when we do know at the time, Sandu, it's how soon we forget, right? So do we just in our minds say, you know, the threat is over? Because, you know, I got the last booster, but I haven't run off to get a booster this time around. I don't know if I'm going to get one. And I'm wondering, because I haven't heard much at all, even though they say we should get one, that's preventative, right? To you?
Well, yeah, you know, I think, you know, you get into the world of vaccinations, and there's all kinds of them, they're going to continue to proliferate. They obviously became the source of a great deal of revenue to big pharma. You know, I think we need to do what we need to do medically. I think there is some benefit from being exposed to some germs, and some germs are dangerous enough that we don't want to be exposed to them without the support of vaccine. I think we have to pick and choose our way through that, and hopefully we do it with good medical advice. That's sort of what I know right now.
Did you ever have a shingle shot?
I did have a shingle shot, and I think it's because number one, I've had chicken pox. Number two, I did some research and figured out how it is you get shingles. And three, I know some people who had shingles, and it was a pretty horrific thing to get. So I decided, what the hell, I'll get the vaccine.
I had shingles, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't get the shingles shot. I kept hearing them say, when you got 50 years old, you need to get a shingles shot, right? And I'm like, yeah, right, okay. The shingles shot costs something like $320 some odd dollars. Medicare doesn't pay it. right?
Well, they do. No, Medicare does now.
When did it start paying it?
Oh, I think it does, no, at it least. No, it doesn't?
No.
You know what? I have gap coverage, so I guess the gap coverage
yeah.
paid for.
Okay. I had shingles about a year and a half ago. And what the people told you was absolutely correct. Very painful. And yet, they said if you don't, even once you had it, you know, shingles can cause blindness and all those things. And after you've had it the first time. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder why Medicare wouldn't pay for that when it pays for so many other things. But the point I'm making, Sandy, is, as you stated, there are all sorts of vaccinations. I haven't had my flu shot. Last year was the first time I ever got a flu shot. And I've had a cold already this year. So I'm going to go and get the flu shot, right? And I don't know, Sandy, if it's even worth battling as we get older. We should be looking at protection, right? I mean, instead of saying, well, they're trying to make money.
I think we should follow science, and I think we should follow our instincts. There is a risk-benefit analysis to be done with any of that kind of stuff, and when the risk is high enough, I think you end up pursuing it. And you know, the flu shot. Flu isn't very risky until you get elderly or unless you have some other infirmity, and so maybe you're more likely to get a flu shot in those circumstances.
You know. Personally, I have noticed again that by now, a year ago, 2 years ago, the conversation was all about COVID, 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 COVID. We really, Sandy, have come through something as a society when we came through this COVID. And I shouldn't say as if I somehow think this is done with. But for certain people, it won't be done with. But for the majority of us, Sandy, the mask wearing and all of those things, you know, globally, it's they've done a great job to hold it to where they held it. Right? I mean, this pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem and the situation was it was a new disease, and so I think the early portion of it, the horrific specter we had of what it might be didn't get realized, and it really became something that for most people was pretty much like a serious case of the flu, or even a less serious case of the flu. The problem was that for some people it was much, much worse. But, you know, we've always lived in the specter of diseases that can be serious problems. And I think the issue with COVID was that it was new, and it was a new on the horizon and unknown and not clear exactly how horrific it would be. Now we have a much better understanding of it.
You know, Sandy, Jess... Our medical, the people who the scientists and clearly this was global. It wasn't just something that the American scientists did, but a global way of putting all of those wondrous minds together. And if you really think about the magnitude, it was global, right? I mean, it really was a global issue. We just saw it from our perspective here in America, where we had more people die than maybe all the rest of the people. But the fact that we were able to come up with the vaccines and all of those things, Sandy, and then kind of eradicated, and for now. But it's no different than polio or any of these other things those things may be eradicated for a short period of time, but you can never totally eradicate them, right? Or tuberculosis or all of those things, because we've seen some signs of even those things coming back.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, I don't think COVID isn't eradicated. I think we've just, number one, it's morphed into something that's different.
Tolerable.
And two, we've gotten used to it. And so it's no longer the horrific specter that it was when we were all washing our groceries and we brought them home and, you know, taking extreme steps because of its, you know, it was, we were treating it like it could be Ebola, and it didn't turn into that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. To some extent, we have just calmed down about it and come to understand it better. And two, I think it's morphed into something that is not quite as acute. Our hospital system isn't as overwhelmed by it.
So we've learned something as a society, right? I mean, you know, we've learned something as a society because I remember now, all I could think about was how I was in the house for almost a year, right? We couldn't even see. We were afraid to even visit our own family members, right? And we overcame all of those things. And as I, like I said, and as I move around and am out and really reintroducing myself to being out and about and feel comfortable in that, I don't have the anxiety that we had before. Even if it's no more than going to the Buck game, right? Or whatever it is, where you're around all these people, you know, maybe in the back of your mind, you still say, "I don't know," but yet it's kind of like testing your wings to see if you can fly again.
Yeah, I think most people have sort of burst back on the scene and decided they're gonna throw some of that caution to the wind and let the chips fall where they may. I mean, I have a sense that there's a little bit more of that outlook about how you live your life. Because, you know, one of the things we did realize is how much we were giving up during that time period. And life is too short, maybe, to give up that much in that circumstance. Or at least that's a decision that I think that came to be made. I think that's why, you know, the caller, the first thing this morning was talking about the situation in China where they still have total lockdowns in China because they have a zero COVID policy. Now, either they know something about COVID that we don't know, or it seems like there's quite an overreaction, or they might understand that the crowded conditions in China and the huge population they have would overwhelm their hospital system if a contagion took hold that basically a high percentage of the people got.
You know, Sandy, I wanted to, at least before we go to break, just broach this subject. We've been looking at China as the largest, you know, population on Earth. And India,
yeah, India's
is about ready to overtake them.
Yeah.
And so we don't talk much about India. You been to India?
I haven't been to India. But India is an interesting example of, you know, it came out of its colonial period as a parliamentary system. And, it's had a swing to the right. It's got some kind of serious religious embedded issues.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about India when we come back from break. Hang on the phones. I'll come to you right away. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back. to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday, Mondays. Monday with Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, India. Why are we not spending a lot of time talking about India? Because India is, I mean, going to be overtake China with sheer numbers of people. But India has done a good job of educating its population, too. At some point in time, is India going to eventually get it right and become another China?
It is very likely. No.
They really do educate their people now.
No, it's got a very broad education system. It has a rapidly growing middle class. I mean, and it's got a substantial economic boom sort of going, actually. I think people are rekindling their view of India and realizing that it is a very important place. It doesn't have quite the broad economic development that China has ongoing now, and it hasn't attached itself to the technical developments that China has. But India is going to be a very important country in the world. And interestingly, both India and China have been sort of come under the umbrella of trade with Russia. You know, Russia's been actively trying to formulate a troika that would include those three countries. And when you look down the road and into the future, you can realize that India and China will be very, very important in the world economy.
So, Sandy, what is our relationship with India? And why haven't we been able to see India through the same prism that we saw China? Knowing the sheer number of people, you would think that would be somewhere we would be looking to build trade with.
Well, I think we've walked a tightrope with India. Number one, we forged a relationship with Pakistan, as fraught a country as that is. The United States continues to be the primary munitions supplier to Pakistan, which incidentally is a nuclear nation and a fairly fragile one at that. So Pakistan and India are obviously
enemies
at knife point with one another. With respect to our relationship to India, Russia was very active. The USSR was very active in cultivating India, for instance, with respect to the sale of weaponry. And that was in large part because we were selling weapons to Pakistan, and so India began to buy weapons from the USSR. Our foreign policy has been a mixed bag as far as India is concerned. And now they have Modi, the head of the Indian government, is quite a right-wing person who's sort of reigniting tribalism in India, meaning Hindu versus Muslim kind of feelings that are more strident there now. But, India came out of its colonial period with a very sound educational system. And so I think we're trying to rebuild and reforge a relationship with India, but our relationship with India is
lukewarm.
Lukewarm. So, it's not fragile in that we're enemies. It's just that it's lukewarm.
Well, I can it afford to stay that way when you realize that if those people with 8 billion people or so.
Well, no. India's got 1.3 or 4 billion.
Yeah, I mean, I'm taking global, yeah, but I'm talking about
the global. World. Yeah, the world.
Yeah, but when you're talking about that, Sandy, and those people are educating in themselves, at some point in time, they're going to be a formidable, society.
No, absolutely. And just to for the last 3 minutes, we can jump to the subject we normally start with. But India is going to become such an important society that we might start playing NFL football games in Mumbai.
Well, you know,
when the Packers play the Bears in Mumbai, we'll know that it's
arrived, right?
Yeah.
Put the caller on the line, whoever that is. Just put them on the line. I think I know who it is. Yeah. Good afternoon, morning, quickly.
Oh, thanks, Earl, Sandy. Yeah, this is David out in California. Yeah, I was just going to raise, you were talking about India there, and for maybe about 10 years ago, the Russians, the Chinese, and India were trying to put together a trade arrangement so that they would have commercial trade in a big way. And I think it was going to actually wrap around to the Middle East so that you would have for example, train service from Moscow over to Beijing, down to India, and then across to Saudi Arabia and into the Middle East. And so there was so much fear and loathing about that that I think that part of the disdain or the calculated ignoring of India came from that.
All right. I wish I had more time, Dave. Thank you very much for the call.
Sure.
You know, Sandy, it, certainly, you know, we're going to have to be talking about it in the future. We outsource a lot of work to India from our nation, and you know, you don't realize it many times until you have to talk to somebody that we used to be an American on the other side of that phone. Those are people from India now.
Yeah, I mean, India's, and there are parts of India that are seriously developed and well into the technical sphere, and the service industry. Law firms are using Indians to do paralegal work. They're the overnight work that's used to be done in a law firm in New York City gets done overnight in India.
All right, Sandy, it looks like we got to leave it there. Appreciate it.
Yep.
We'll talk on Friday. All right. Thank you, everybody who made the show go. 30 degrees, going down to 28.
I was watching snow.
Sandy, I was watching them making snow this morning.
Well, the news forecast each break said there'd be 3 inches of snow tonight.
Yeah, I was trying to skip that. But it's coming. All right. Thank you, Connor. We'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuning into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.